Welcome to What You Know About RJ, sharing stories and skills about restorative justice, a podcast of the California Conference for Equality and Justice. CCEJ is an organization that works to eliminate bias, bigotry, and racism. I'm your host, Gilbert Salazar. In our last season, we introduced you to past members of
CCEJ staff
that were in care of restorative justice implementation and coaching with schools. We're starting this new season with an introduction to our new team called Luminad, which means to shine light on, to illuminate. In this current moment where, as a nation, consciousness and action have been illuminated, and where we all have seen statues of Confederate military leaders and Spanish clergy, such as Junipero Serra, are being torn down, taken down, and taken away from public view, while on store shelves,
stereotyping
products such as Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, and Eskimo pies are being repackaged, rebranded, and remarketed, and sports teams are being changed from names disrespectful to Native and Indigenous communities, we look to where the light is sourced from that shone on these injustices and recall the years, decades, and centuries of voices of oppressed folks, specifically enslaved folks, incarcerated folks, immigrants, women,
Black, Indigenous, and other people of color,
and folks whose identities meet at the intersections of race, gender, class, body, sexuality, and gender expression, whose experiences are what have led to these changes and transformations. We specifically acknowledge the Black Lives Matter movement as the spark that activated the waves of changes and transformations in this, our collective current movement. In particular, we acknowledge the activists, organizers of this time, those that have participated in demonstrations and protests, and the lives of
cisgender and transgender Black people
who have been killed at the hands, knees, and guns of police. We say the names of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Leilin Extravaganza Kublet-Polanco, Tatiana Jefferson, Stephon Clark, Botham Jean, Philando Castile, Alton Sterling, Michelle Cousseau, Freddie Gray, Janisha Fonville, Eric Gardner, Tamir Rice, Laquan McDonald, Akai Gurley, Michael Brown, Gabriela Nevarez, Tanisha Anderson, Sandra Bland, Sean Bell, Oscar Grant, Trayvon Martin, and the many, many others who are remembered, loved, and mourned. May we who remain the living do the work to create space and air for light to break in. Thank you for listening. Welcome to What You Know About RJ, sharing stories and skills about restorative justice, a podcast of the California Conference for Equality and Justice. I'm your host, Gilbert Salazar, and today we're talking about restorative culture in a school, how it's built, how it's sustained, and how it could impact during unsteady times such as now. With me today is an administrator from our team's longest partnership, who I've been working with for a number of years now. And I'm super happy to spend this time with her. And we hope that school leaders, teachers, parents who are curious about restorative practices in their schools can learn more. I'm going to pass the mic to our special guest, Kim Plaza, right now.
Hello. So, my name is Kimberly Plaza, and I work at Camino Nuevo Charter Academy, Burlington. So we're a network of seven schools, and Burlington's actually the first school that was started out of the seven schools. It's a K-8 school. It's been around for about 20 years. I am the assistant principal of student supports there. I used to be the dean of culture. I've also taught there, so I taught math and science for two or three years. So I've been at the school for about 7 years, which is around the same amount of time that we have been working with CCEJ. So when I started, I actually think my first year that we were there, we didn't have the partnership, but then my second year there, we started the partnership. And so I worked with CCEJ as a teacher. I was trained in community building circles as a teacher, and then have just continued my work with Gilbert and CCEJ for the last 6 years as an administrator.
Yeah, it's been a long journey.
For sure.
I think the first question I wanted to ask is, what are some specific ways that CCEJ has supported Burlington, supported you? I know you mentioned the community building training. So anything that you could share with folks would be helpful.
I mean, I think that's the number one thing that comes to my head is the community building training, because I think that, you know, every year I find that the bulk of our time is spent on, like, when are we going to train teachers? How are we going to train teachers? In the past 2 years, I would say even the past 3 years, like 3 years ago, thinking like, how do we get the whole staff trained? Because typically, you know, I don't know how it's done at other schools, but at our school, it just started with teachers being trained. And then it got to the point where I said, you know what, I think it's important for everybody to be trained. So I remember about 3 years ago, we held two or three different trainings in 1 year for all staff to be trained. And then, you know, in the last 2 years, really getting innovative and thinking of, like, how else can this training look other than, you know, your typical 2 day, 6 hours a day training. So I think that's the first thing that comes to mind is the community building training. But, you know, other ways that CCEJ has been around is, like, you know, coaching, coming in and doing some coaching with me, coming in and doing some coaching with teachers sometimes, hosting circle with teachers to kind of model, you know, what a circle can look like, doing observations and providing feedback to teachers on ways that they can strengthen their circle practices. I think those are some of the things that we've done with CCEJ at Burlington.
Mm-hmm. You know, Burlington is, you know, I've been with CCEJ for, I guess this is my sixth school year coming up, I think, And so Burlington was, you know, the longest partnership that I personally have had. And each time that somebody, there would be a new team member in the team, like, you know, Burlington would be the spot, the school that I would go, maybe I would take them. And whenever there would be a request from another school side of, you know, who can we observe? Who can we speak to? You know, Burlington has been one of the few, like, schools that immediately come to mind, not just because of the 5 years, but because of just all of the amazing work that you all have done. So I'm super excited to kind of squeeze some of the juice, get some of the cherries and seeds from that work. And also especially to name the ways in which Burlington has really impacted me in this work. But the second thing I wanted to get to was to ask from your mind, how would you define restorative culture and what has Burlington done to create it?
I mean, it's been a work in progress. So I'll start there. I think, you know, I think about myself, and I think you and I have talked about this before, Gilbert, that, like, as a teacher, 6-7 years ago, whenever we started, it seems like forever ago, I wasn't necessarily bought into the idea of circle. I wasn't, you know, as a teacher, the teacher who was like, let's do circle. And it's just, I don't know if it's when I became an administrator and I got to kind of have this, like, bird's eye view, and I got to really see, like, how it was impacting different parts of our school, that I kind of started to see, like, yeah, this is something powerful. This is work that we should be doing. And something just kind of clicked in me, and you know, I was like, this is where we need to spend our time. So I would say, you know, creating a restorative culture is just something that takes a lot of time, and it has to involve all stakeholders. Like, I'm even seeing the difference now, because again, in the beginning when we started, it was just teachers. So that was one thing. And then we moved on and we did all staff. That even showed, you know, some differences that year. And then we started to talk with parents. And I think once we started to talk with parents, we had the teachers on board, we had the staff on board, we had the parents on board. You know, our students were on board because they're doing circle in their classrooms, having these types of conversations every once a week. And I think that when you start to involve everyone, that's when it becomes a part of your culture. And that's when you can really say, you know, yeah, that's when you can say, like, this is our culture. Like somebody once told me, if everyone is not doing it, it's not a part of your culture. And so I think it takes time and it takes investment from all stakeholders. You can't just focus on the teachers or just the students or just the staff or just the parents or just the admin or just me. You know, it has to be everyone. So I think that's how you create a restorative culture. And I think the definition of a restorative culture, I think it just makes me think of relationships. It makes me think about the importance of building relationships, the importance of, you know, spending time really actively, like, trying to build relationships with the students, with each other, because it's all really relationship-based, right? At the end of the day, you know, if you have a relationship with someone, we talk about harm, we talk about restoring harm, and like if you have a relationship with someone, you're less likely to harm them, and if you do harm them, you're more likely to want to restore that harm and want to make it better, right? Because you have some sort of investment there. And so I think that's how you create it. I think that's what it means. But I think the most important thing is having everyone on board. I think is when I started to see the impact of restorative work. It was already there when teachers were doing it. It got a little bit stronger when we involved staff. Once we got the parents involved, like, we were a restorative school.
I think this is something that Tark and I talked about in his episode, and it continues to be a question to name to schools. And so I'll name it to you, is why is culture, why are relationships important to the function of a school?
I mean, culture is everything, you know? it's like, it's, I don't even know how to say it, but like, it's like, it's what makes you either want to come to school or not come to school. You know, like for everyone, if you're a teacher and you know, we have a really positive culture, it's what gets you up in the morning because you want to go, you feel good in this place, you want to be around your students, you want to be around your colleagues. Same with students. Like, if we create a positive and joyful culture, it's what makes them want to get up and come to school, because like, they just know that their class is going to be awesome, that, you know, recess is going to be awesome, that, you know, the assemblies we have, the events we have are going to be great. Culture is, if you do not have a positive culture, you're not going to have a place where kids can learn, because they're always going to be, you know, thinking about just all the negative things that are going around. So I think culture is really important. And I think it's important to, like, really be, one thing that I've learned in my position is like, to not leave culture to chance, right? You have to be really systematic in the way that you create a culture. Like, you can't just go in there and be like, oh, you know, we're going to have a positive culture. And it's like, yeah, that's what everybody wants, but how are we going to do that? And so I've spent a lot of time in the past few years just working on how can we make things systematic? How can we, you know, ensure that we're creating a positive environment for all of our, everyone who steps into the door, like where you just step in and you're like, wow, this is a place that I want to be. Culture is everything. Culture is everything. And if you don't have a good culture, like, I think that's the place to start before you do any other work. Because even, you know, you can have the best teachers at your school, you know, the top-notch teachers who, like, get great test scores or get great results. But like at the end of the day, if your culture's not, you know, where it should be, that's not going to matter. So I think that's always where you need to start whenever, whenever you just are out of school.
I know that it could be super easy, because I felt this way, to be frustrated when a school or an admin or a district doesn't have the understanding of exactly what you just said about culture and relationships and the atmosphere of a school. What are some reasons why a school or adults or administration might not connect the work of culture to the function of a school? I know you talked about when you were the movement that you made when you were a teacher, and then when you were an admin, when you were a dean of culture and now AP. But I think, you know, I hear stories all the time, the stories from you and what you just shared about why it's important and the motivation to do it. And, you know, there continues to be school sites where that is not on their, culture work is not on their agenda. There's so many other things to get to. So I'm just wondering, like, what are some reasons why you think an admin just may not have what we think, somebody else might think, the understanding of why it's important?
I don't know if I'm understanding, but like, are you asking like why do people kind of push culture to the side?
Yeah.
And not do that work? Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question. I mean, I feel like I'm trying to think just about my experience, mm-hmm. being at the school for going on 7 years now. And I could probably say that in the first few years that I was there, culture wasn't a focus. And you could feel it, you know, you could feel, I wouldn't say we had like this negative culture where like it was terrible and everybody hated work and like, but we also didn't have what we have now, right? Which is like a positive culture that our students want to be there, our staff want to be there. I mean, you've been there, you've seen it. But yeah, it wasn't a huge focus, I would say, let's say five, six years back. I don't know why, and I don't know what clicked, I guess, that made us start to make that connection of like, we need to work on culture. And I think it starts with the teachers, right? Like, I think that if you're going to have a positive school culture, the first thing that I think about is your teachers need to have good relationships with administrators, right? Because there needs to be like a level of trust. Because if not, everything that we do is going to be like, well, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? You know, I don't understand this. You're just making us do things, you know? And there's got to be like, so there's got to be a level of trust there, and there's got to be relationships there, because then there's, you know, when we do things, it's like, okay, yeah, I trust you. I know that you're going in the right direction. I know why you're doing this. And so it wasn't until a few years after I started working there that we started to do that work. Again, I don't know what it was, what clicked, how we kind of figured out that that's what we needed to do. And then in the last 2 years, actually, we had a transition to a new principal, which, you know, he's been with us for going on 3 years now. He came in really about that, like, you know, really about like, we need to build good relationships with our teachers first before we can do anything else. And so there was a bigger focus on culture. There was a bigger focus on like partnerships and, you know, co-creating PDs and like really having teachers do the work with us as opposed to having the work done to them, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, teachers co-leading PDs with us instead of like us just standing at the front being like, you know, we're the all-knowing, learn from us kind of thing. So yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, but I think that I don't know why administrators don't make that connection, and I don't know what it took for us to make that connection, but I can say that when we finally did, it definitely had a strong impact.
So I think looking at like the specific things that Burlington has done, that we've done, you know, for it's remembering that it's like super easy for like those of us that are doing the work to talk about restorative culture and like the work and its in and its impact. But for the folks who could be listening who like have not been to a training, not read any books about restorative work or justice or practices, what are specific things that you could share of how restorative justice work has impacted students? Like, what are the specific things that teachers have done that you've all done or that we've done together?
I mean, I think it goes back to the same thing for me. I think relationships. I think that, you know, we have seen students, like the students who, you know, let's say those students who would normally, without, you know, a restorative environment, would be the ones who are suspended, you know, once every month, because we have those students, you know, who do things where it's like in a different time, like this would be the outcome for you. We've seen, like, I'm not going to tell you that those students have changed dramatically and that, like, oh, all of a sudden they're, you know, making all the right choices. Like, it's not that easy. It's not that simple. But we've seen the impact in that these kids, I feel like sometimes felt like they were just kind of pushed away and ignored and isolated. And now it's more like, yeah, man, I'm still making these bad choices, but like, I appreciate you talking to me about it, you know, like a human. I appreciate us, you know, having this conversation about it. And maybe they don't learn that time. Maybe they still, you know, do something else and we have to have another conversation and we have to restore more harm. But, you know, it creates a feeling of like, I'm allowed to make mistakes and I'm allowed to fix those mistakes. It's not just like I make a mistake and I'm out of here, you know? And, you know, there's one student that I'm thinking about right now in particular who is one of those students where he just every week, every month, it was something different. And we just continued to work with him and continued to work with him and continued to think of different, you know, innovative ways that we could have him restore the harm that he was creating or doing at our school. And at some point, you know, we did have to have a meeting at our central office with him and like our, you know, senior leadership team, because it did get to the point where it could possibly have been an expulsion. And, you know, we didn't expel him. But I remember him having this moment of like, you know, he said, what did he say? He said, I really appreciate the work that you guys have done with me. I know that I don't make the best choices. But I feel like, you know, Burlington is a school that's really helped me and I'm still learning. And, you know, I don't think I would find this anywhere else. So I just really want to thank you guys for giving me another chance. And, you know, there's times when students say things and you know that they're just telling you what you want to hear. This was not one of those moments. Like, you could tell, like, he was being very genuine. And then, you know, our principal is very much like, you got this, you got this. And he turned around and he was just like, yeah, I do. I got this. Because the principal was like, do you need anything from us? Like, what can we do so you end the year strong? Like, we want to make sure you end the year strong. And he was like, no, I don't need anything. I got this. I'm going to do this. And so, yeah, I already forgot the question that you asked because I just started talking about the student.
What grade was he in?
The impact on students. Uh-huh. You asked. Yeah. He was in eighth grade, so he was gonna. He's finished his time with us. But yeah, going back, yeah, that was the question. The impact on students. I just feel like, you know, students feel cared for. You know, they feel like, again, going back to what I said, they're allowed to make mistakes because I know that in a different time, like, we weren't allowed to make mistakes. It was just like, well, you're done. You made it. Bye. You know, That's not how it is now. But I also feel like, and I don't know if you're going to ask about this at some point, but I feel like that's also where you get your people who are opposed to restorative justice, right? Because they're just like, well, if you just keep giving these kids chances and you don't give them any consequences, like, when are they going to learn? You know, like, this is why kids do whatever they want these days, because nothing happens to them when they make a bad choice. Like, there's no consequences. And, you know, I've definitely had teachers who have said that to us, who, like, are no longer with us, just because we are such a restorative community that, like, you know, they just don't fit into that, and they see that, and I guess they don't like it, and they choose to move on. But yeah, I think that's where a lot of the against RJ people come in, because they just don't think that, you know, I guess giving all these chances or having all these conversations is what's going to help these kids. It's like being harsh and giving consequences and giving punishments. And I don't think it's like that. I think that, you know, RJ is, it's a process. It's, mm. it's, I think teachers sometimes, or just to anybody who's opposed to RJ, you know, they want us to have one conversation or one harm and conflict circle or one, you know, use one RJ practice and there this kid is like saved, you know, and it's not like that. Like with this student in particular that I'm telling you about, dude, we've been working with him since fifth grade. Mm. Oh, and he's in eighth, we're going on to ninth grade now, and now is when it's starting to click.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a lot of work. And yeah, we've been working on it for 4 years. And yeah, we got frustrated and we got angry and we got upset. But like, you know, because of the work that we did, he's now able to really reflect and you know, go into high school with this, I guess, new view that he wouldn't have had if we would have just been like, oh, you're expelled. You know, we don't want to deal with you. So, yeah, I hope I answered that question.
Yeah, and I haven't heard that story. Thank you for, I'm so grateful to hear that. I don't know if you mentioned at the top, and, you know, it's important that folks know that Burlington at Camino Nuevo is a K-8 site, which makes it super unique, especially in this work. So on the community building relationship part, how often are circles happening? Who's planning them? What are the topics? And if I'm taking someone to Burlington on any given day when there is circle, what would somebody see? What would somebody like hear in any circles from kindergarten all the way to eighth grade?
Are you guys good over there?
Yes.
Yeah, we can all see each other. All right. So today for tribes, we're gonna do our circle, and we want to start with los acuerdos del círculo. Así que quiero que los leas a todos los acuerdos, y quiero que eliges uno. Te doy un minuto. Give me a thumbs up when you're ready. And let's share out el acuerdo del círculo. Go ahead. Give me a thumbs up when you guys are ready.
You did last year.
Las preguntas o en el círculo. Okay, antes de hacer las preguntas del círculo, I quiero hablar de la pieza hablante, right? My talking piece today is in this bag. Today, our talking piece is going to be a very special stone, a crystal stone. And you guys know how much I love crystals and stones. You see my collection over at my desk over there. Some of you guys have even contributed to it.
Yeah.
Right? This stone or crystal is supposed to have special powers. So it is called a tree agamic. And we're gonna be using this one today, and I'm gonna tell you what it means. So a tree agate encourages inner peace and makes us aware of our own strength. It gives us courage in situations, and it helps us see.
I'll try to answer all your questions because that was like four questions. But I'll start with when or how often circle happens. So at Burlington, we have what we call tribes, and it's our advisory period, and we call it tribes. I don't know why it's called tribes. I inherited that, and I just kind of, you know, left it as tribes. And, you know, we, within tribes, within our advisory time is when we do circle. So circle is done once a week across every single classroom, K-8. So we have three kinder, three first, three second, three third, and then 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And so across every classroom, you will see them doing circle once a week. Depending on the grade, that tells you how much time to, like kinder, you might just see them do circle for like 10 minutes. And then in middle school, they'll be doing circle for like 30 minutes. And then the other days in advisory are spent, or in tribe are spent doing just like the socio-emotional work, talking about our school values, you know, things like that. I think the really cool part about circle at Burlington is that we have new teachers every year, less and less now, which is great. We used to have like 10 new teachers or 15 new teachers. Now this year, I think we only have 3 new teachers. The great part about circle at Burlington is that it has become such a huge part of our culture that even new teachers who have never sat in circle, who have never been circle trained, still do circle or attempt to do it. And I think that is because, well, first of all, our teachers collaborate a lot, which has also been a huge work in progress. Like, teachers did not collaborate on this level 6 years ago. And now, like, they're just, everything that they do, they're doing it together. And so a big part of that, I think, is, you know, we had a new third grade teacher this year, for example, brand new to the classroom, never had her own classroom. I don't think she's ever done circle, you know, but because our two other third grade teachers who are at Burlington have been there, have been doing circle, they told her about it. They kind of coached her through it a little bit, and she was like, cool, I'm going to do circle. And so wherever you go, whether it's a new teacher who's been there for, you know, 2 months, whether it's a teacher who's been there for 16 years, everyone is doing circle once a week. And I think that was just one question. I forgot the other questions.
So, you know, we spent like, I think 2 years of observing circles from K through eight, which is an amazing thing to have done in the last 2 years. And we have, you know, you've recorded video of teachers doing circle, for somebody that has never seen or participated in a community building circle or experience, what are some of the things that they would see or hear? You know, if, like I say in training, if I'm watching a channel on TV and it's a Burlington class in circle, like what are the, just to give us like a sensory experience of what does it feel like, sound like, what's going on?
Yeah. And that depends on the grade level. So I remember one of your questions was who plans circle. Now I'm
yeah.
thinking about that. Yeah, and that's why that depends, because in over the across the time that I've been an administrator, dean of culture, you know, AP, I've really spent a lot of time in tribes. I've invested a lot of time in tribes and circle. When I came into the position teachers were just planning it on their own, doing circle however they wanted to do circle. They were trained, but like covering topics that they wanted to cover. And then when I stepped into this position, I created a task force of, I called it the culture task force, of teachers who was in charge of planning our week in tribes, which includes our circles. And I thought this was important just for consistency so that we could be, you know, one, doing circle, but two, ensuring that circle is being done, but two, also just so that we know that the same things, our kids are hearing the same things across all of the school, you know? And so I started off with just 6-8. And so with 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, this group of teachers was planning the circles for the teachers. And any classroom that you would go in, the idea was that you could walk into 6th grade and they were doing the same circle as in 7th grade and they were doing the same circle as in 8th grade. And, you know, it wasn't, although the plans were sent out and the circles were sent out, I also always tried to make it and tell teachers, this is a resource for you, but circle is also a time where you get to build relationships with your students. And if there's something else that's going on and you want to shift and talk about something different, please feel free, you know, because this is your time to build relationships with students in whatever way that you think you can do it. But this is just a resource. And so, yeah, sometimes I would find that teachers would email and be like, you know what, this weekend circle, I actually want to talk about this. I don't know if these plans work. And I'm like, that's cool. Do what you got to do, you know. We then expanded to 3-5. And so now we're at a place where 3rd through 8th grade is on this task force. And we have a group of 5 teachers and myself, so 6 of us, who are doing the circle work. Same thing where we write the circles, we send them out to teachers. We say, hey, here's a circle for this week, just based on, you know, our theme for the month, because we do have themes for the month that we want to cover, based on what's going on in the world, you know, like, because I know you came to the school once right after like Kobe Bryant's death.
Yeah, like, I remember that.
Yeah, and so our circle was kind of based on that because our kids needed a space to process that, you know.
And we sat in like a third grade circle.
It was third, yeah.
And Miss was like, you know, very, you know, activated, you know, in grief herself. And I just remember sitting there and being like, wow, you know, like, here's a teacher, full transparency. She's wearing a jersey and showing that the animation of that Kobe, you know, created. And listening to these like little small, like third grade students, you know, talking about or just being asked like how they felt about the animation, you know, and like, mm-hmm. and Kobe Bryant, and mm-hmm. yeah, it was powerful.
Yeah, and so, you know, that was one of those weeks where, sure, we had a theme for the month. I don't even remember what the theme was at that point. We, you know, we had a circle created prior, but this is something that happened, and kids needed a space to talk about it, and so we kind of threw that out the window, and we're like, you know what, this is what we're going to talk about today, and so that's 3-8. I've been wanting to expand to K-2 as well, but I haven't been able to for just different reasons. But in K-2, teachers are planning their own circles. So I think you'll see a lot of consistency in 3-8. You won't see that much consistency in K-2 unless teachers, which for the most part, like I said, our teachers collaborate a lot. But unless teachers are collaborating on those circles, which I know you and I observed 2nd grade this year, and we went to one class and I think they were talking about integrity, and then we went to the other class and they were talking about integrity too. I had nothing to do with that. The teachers were the ones who like connected and decided like, this is what we're going to talk about in circle. And given that it looked very different in both classrooms, just because of like skill level and just because one is trained, one is not. And like, you know, also students and just things like that, but they were talking about the same things. And I think in the two that I think you'll see the most difference in is K-1, just because, one, they're smaller, and so their stamina is not as great, and so, you know, you'll go into kinder and you'll see them in circle for like 10 minutes and that's all they can do. And so, you know, they'll probably just do a game, or they'll probably just do like a, what's your favorite ice cream that day? Just cause you know, they don't have a lot of time. But that's probably where you'll see the most variety. Whereas in like second through eighth grade, you'll see a little more consistency across the classrooms where all the circle topics are generally the same.
You know, you bring up something that I think is super important that I think I'm just kind of thinking about right now, is that if we're thinking about what are some of the qualities that make a school restorative or its culture restorative, you know, you were talking about the Kobe Bryant circles, which seemed like forever ago, February. And I think one of the qualities that Burlington continues to show up as is the ability to pause. I think about the Kobe Bryant circles. I think about like years ago when you were teaching, and I was working with Juliana Santos, who was the dean of culture at the time. And I forget what a middle school grade, and there was I think it was bullying that was maybe it was fourth grade. I wish I it was a maybe it was fourth grade, and there was bullying that was happening. And we yes, it was fourth grade. There was bullying that was happening, and we had the idea to so in Burlington there's about like two classes per grade in most grades. And so we spent time with both of these fourth grade classes and collaboratively with adults who were facilitating, we did this agenda. I think we called it like a workshop day where we had small groups where I think we started with a large game. And then we had small student groups, maybe like eight students in a group, and we did small circles, and then we came back and we debriefed on what the small circles were. And the small circles were about not necessarily bullying, but they were about like how you want to be treated, I think, or positive behaviors. And so the fourth grade teachers after that day reported that the behaviors of bullying that they decreased, they were impacted, that relationships improved. And so that was something that Burlington continued to do, is do these like grade level workshops. I remember, I think for seventh grade one year, we did small circles around sexual harassment, because that had been a large issue. And then I think back to one of the last circles that you and I observed in sixth grade, where a teacher was facilitating, and this was like early March this year, and students kept talking about coronavirus. And then I was watching, and I was like, you know, looking, also thinking about news and you know, seeing the talking piece being passed and the way that it has been typically or was. And I just remember that, you know, that was a feedback that we talked about, there's always been the ability, Burlington has always paused in like what is happening, or like there's been a behavior or a response that has been observed, and then a pause of like using the work of circles sometimes as an intervention. And I also remember that too, because I think the story that I wanted to share was years ago I came in to do an affective statement workshop, and it was a year when a lot of teachers were stepping out and were leaving. And on the day that I came, I think there was like two or three teachers that had put in their notice. And just before I came on, the principal had given that announcement, you know, and just like, you know, the air in the room went out and the energy shifted. And then we had to go into this PD time. And I asked, another testament to the admin at Burlington, I asked Juliana, I was like, can we, you know, can I do a circle? Like I, you know, and she was like, yeah, go for it. And I had nothing planned. And we sat down. I don't even remember if you were there that day, but I think for me, it was a practice of like curiosity and intention and just sitting in the unknown. And the only thing that came up to me was an agenda around pets. And the circle ended up being about Petsa had passed away, and we ended up talking about grief and loss through pets. And I remember that after that, there was a teacher who wasn't quite, you know, resistant, who just like was unsure about what this was about. And I, you know, asked for feedback like after the circle, and folks had said, we just talked about what we were feeling without talking about the actual incident. Like, now I get what circle can be like. And I just remember like that was a huge learning moment even for me in that time. And so, yeah, I just wanted to, you know, wherever I go, I want to uplift Burlington and like what you all have done, because the ability to just like stop and pause and like reshift I've seen the impact of culture. Because my next question was going to be around, how has this work impacted adults? I mean, you mentioned that like less and less, year after year, there's less and less new teachers. And so I'm wondering like what your thoughts are about culture and adults on campus, or anything to share about that.
Well, I think before I answer that question, I actually think I remember that day. I think I do. I might be making stuff up in my head. I don't know. I make stuff up in my head now sometimes. I think I remember that day with the pets and the teachers leaving. And I think I remember because I remember I was pregnant at the time too. And I remember one of the teachers that was leaving was one of my partner teachers. And I remember just immediately being stressed out and being like, man, I'm pregnant. I'm already stressed. I already have a lot to do. Now I'm going to have more to do because this teacher's leaving. And I think I remember that. I'm trying to remember more details, but I vaguely remember it. And I was going to say, going back to the workshops that you talked about, I want to say, I agree with you. I think that we at Burlington have been very good at pausing and like being kind of reactive. I would say that though, one push that I would have for us is how can we now be proactive? Because I agree with the fourth grade thing that you said, where, you know, you did the fourth grade workshop. And I say that I wasn't the one who ran that with you. Juliana was. I've ran other ones with you, and I've seen I've seen the same impact where like we do it, and then for like a week or two, the kids, you can see that like something happened in them after that workshop. But then 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks pass, and then we kind of start to go back, right? Because we talked about it once. And so I would really push Burlington to, and myself, to really think of like, how can we keep that work alive so that it's not just like a one-time conversation of like, you know, bullying, it's bad or whatever, you know? I would say like, how do we continue to have those conversations so that eventually we don't even need these, you know, grade level workshops? Because these grade level workshops that we did would pause instruction. Like we would take, you know, we would do them from 1:30 to 3 o'clock, an hour and a half where like instruction would normally be happening. And we would use that time to do these workshops. But again, you know, we would talk about it once, we'd see the impact for a little while, and then we'd kind of see kids start to go back to their old ways. So I would just push us to think like, how can we keep that work alive, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then your question around how has it impacted adults? I don't think we've ever actually used the words restorative culture with adults. But I think that we've done a lot of work around culture with our adults. And that's the reason why we have had a reduction in the amount of people who have chosen to leave us, right? And like I said, I think it's been a lot about like really working on our team, really defining on what does a team mean versus a group, you know, really giving teachers an opportunity to partner with us, as opposed to, like I mentioned before, you know, having the work done to them, having them do the work with us, having them, you know, co-lead PDs, having them, you know, suggest topics for PDs, having them, we've created in the last 2 years, we've had an instructional leadership team. So it's a group of teachers who really help us plan out the year, the scope and sequence for the year for PD. Like, here are the things that we want to talk about in PD this year. And so I think really giving teachers a voice and like having them know that they have a voice, they have input, and that, because you know, a lot of schools can just say like, yeah, we're listening, tell us your input, give us your feedback, but then nothing happens with that feedback. I think being really explicit around like, you gave us this feedback, here is what we are doing now as a result of that feedback, has been really, really helpful. And then transparency. I think transparency has been the biggest thing. And we have a staff survey, a teacher survey that we do twice a year. And this past semester or quarter, where we moved into distance learning, we have seen the best results that I have ever seen on this staff survey. And I think part of it is because being online, being remote, seeing each other through the camera has really forced us to be more thoughtful around like, how can we build connections through a computer? And like, yeah, and it's really forced us to really be honest. Again, the same word, transparent. You know, it's been a time where we don't know what's going to happen. And we've just had to be honest about that. Like, you know, usually with teachers, you kind of have to be the, our principal likes to say we control the temperature, right? So if like, as admin, we're like freaking out, our teachers are going to freak out. And so normally teachers come to us for answers. We have those answers. We kind of, you know, settle them a little bit. And we really haven't had the answers this year. You know, because nobody has the answers. Nobody knows what's going to happen in this pandemic. And so, you know, this past quarter, it's been a lot of like those types of conversations where it's been like, listen, we don't know. You know, we had a lot of budget cuts and we had to have difficult conversations around like, we're going to have to let some people go. And they're like, well, who's going to be let go? And we're like, we don't know, you know, but we can assure you we're going to, you know, tell you every step of the way. And we've been as honest as we have been, as we can be. And I think we have created a lot of empathy, you know, for us, for the teachers, and them for us, which I felt like, I always felt like it was missing from them to us. You know, I was like, teachers don't really have a lot of empathy for school leaders, but I feel like in this time, it's really helped us become a stronger team because we've had to work together, even though we're apart. You know, we're all at our own houses. So, yeah, I mean, I think to answer your question, it's just the constant focus on culture and the constant focus on, like, we're listening, you matter, we want your input, partner with us. I think that's what has caused us to have less and less teachers leave every year because they feel like they're valued. They're valued at our school.
One of the last questions for us is, you know, obviously I think as you were talking about this time that we're in this pandemic where and schools have been shut down and schools will come back virtually in the fall, first of all, like, what's the population of students and families at Burlington so that folks know? And then how has all of the culture work that was created in real time, in physical time, how did that impact students and families during distance learning?
So we have, I would say 100% of our students are on free and reduced lunch. You know, I would say also almost 100%, if not 99-98%, are Latino, Spanish as a first language. For some, Spanish is a second language. We have a lot of families who speak their indigenous language, an indigenous language at home. So a lot of our students are coming into our school in kindergarten with Spanish as a second language and then English as a third. So that's kind of our population. And we are in the MacArthur Park area. So we're down almost like next to downtown. A few blocks from the Staples Center. And so, yeah, during this pandemic, I feel like we've created such a culture of feedback that I feel like that's what we've seen a lot in this pandemic. Like a lot of parents coming to us being like, hey, like, this isn't working. Can we do it this way? You know, a lot of students feeling like they can say like, hey, you know, this is a lot of work. I want to do it, but like, you know, I don't know. Can is there a different way? Can we work something out? Because I'm overwhelmed. So I feel like we've created this culture where like we are able to be honest, and we've given parents, we've told parents and we've given them that feeling of like, you guys can be honest with us too. Same with the students. In terms of like our RJ work, it was really interesting because, you know, when we first started distance learning, honestly, like circle was not the first thing in my head. Like I was just like, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? I also coach, you know, some teachers. I was like, how are they going to teach? Like, how can I help them? Like, so circle wasn't necessarily the first thing that came to my mind. And it wasn't until a few weeks in that I started to think, okay, well, now that we're kind of settling in, now that teachers kind of have the hang of it, now that teachers have their schedules, like what can circle look like, or what can a circle-ish, you know, environment look like online? But it was interesting because even though I didn't think about it and I didn't give teachers any guidance around doing circle or holding tribes with their students, there were teachers who were doing it already. So there were teachers who reached out to me and said, hey, Kim, like, you know, we're doing circle every Tuesday at 10 o'clock. Would love for you to stop by and give us some feedback. And I was like, that's cool. Like, I didn't even know that you were doing that. So fourth grade, I know, was doing it. Fifth grade was doing it. I know third grade was holding a space as well. And so, you know, I would pop into their different Zoom sessions or whatever sessions, and you know, it had all of the components of a circle just online. Like they would come in, they'd check in, you know, like if you were a color, what color would you be? And so you had kids in the chat box, like I'd be blue because I feel sad or whatever. They had a game. You know, I remember I logged in and there was a teacher playing like virtual hangman, which is like, you know, not one of the circle games we learned, but like, hey, it's a game, right? Mm-hmm. They had sharing. Like I jumped on a fifth grade call and the teacher had asked all of the kids to come with a baby picture. And so they were all sharing their baby picture and like putting it up to the camera and saying like, this is when I was four and it was my birthday or whatever. I don't know what they were saying. And so it was just interesting that, again, going back to that, it's just such a big part of our culture that without having to have any guidance from me, without having to be told like, hey, remember circle, don't forget about circle, like teachers on their own were just like, we need a space for this, even if we're not on campus. So that's what I've seen in the pandemic. It's been great. The kids love it. Like, I feel like that's when all the kids log in. You know, it's been difficult to get kids to log in for their like academic sessions, their small groups for math, for reading. But when it's tribes, like I remember even logging into seventh grade, and seventh grade, you would think, you know, they don't want to log in, but they had about 40 out of 60 kids in that room. And, you know, with our middle schoolers, we actually had a lot of issues with like, they don't like to be on camera. So they would like turn their cameras off. All of these kids had their cameras on. Like they see each other. Uh-huh. And I think a lot of it too was like the teacher pushing, right? Like turn your camera on. But it was just really great to see the kids logging in and really just wanting to be with each other, you know, wanting to be around each other for a moment. So yeah.
Is there any suggestions that you have for schools in whatever level of implementation, if they've been trained and are doing this work, or if they're just wanting to consider culture and creating culture virtually? Is there any last things to say for school leaders, for schools?
I mean, I would say you have to start with the adults. Mm-hmm. I would say that, you know, people always say that students are the most important people on our campus, and I agree with that, but I also think that teachers are the most important people on our campus, because without teachers, we don't have a place for students, you know? So I would say it starts with the adults. I would say that if you can really work on your adult culture and get that down to a place where you're like, yeah, this is a place where teachers want to be, that will then transfer to students, where students are like, this is a place where I want to be. I'm thinking, I don't know why I'm thinking about this right now, but I'm thinking about when I, at my previous school, which, like, we didn't do any RJ work or anything, and we were in San Jose, a whole different school, a whole different story. But I just remember I taught second grade, and, you know, I taught with two girls who eventually became my best friends, who I now still, you know, have a relationship with and still talk to, you know. And I just remember, without meaning to, like, within the second grade team, like, we created this culture because the kids saw how we worked together. They saw how much we loved each other. They saw us laughing with each other. That then, it transferred to the kids, right? And the kids were able to, I guess we were a model for them, you know, of, like, this is what working at a school with a positive school culture looks like. That we were a model for them. And so I would say that that's how it has to start. It has to start with the teachers, because you can talk about circle till you're blue in the face. You can talk about restorative practices. You can talk about a positive school culture. But if at the end of the day, your teachers are not happy to be there, and at the end of the day, your teachers are not smiling at the front of the classroom and really genuinely wanting to, you know, be with students, it's not going to matter. So I would say invest the time in really creating a positive culture among the adults on campus, and then they'll do the work for you. After that, you don't really have to spend the time on the students, because they'll be so invested in it that they'll go ahead and they'll do the work with the students. And I would say that's when we saw the transformation at Burlington, was when we started to focus on our adults. Yeah.
And as, you know, further evidence of that, even in the last 2 years when you and I were doing the observations, especially this year, I remember in the second and third grade for the last 2 years, and second grade this year especially, I remember those teachers in their framing of circle and in their question, in their responses to the question. I remember the second grade circle about integrity. Miss was talking about when she was having lunch with the other second grade teacher, and they were talking, and she, I think the other teacher affirmed her in some way, and she was naming that. And I think that day we heard two teachers naming in their conversations with their colleagues where something positive was said or shared or heard, and then saying that to the students. And I had never heard a teacher in circle name, oh, well, this is my response of integrity when Miss so-and-so said this to me, or when I said this to somebody. And so I just remember that was another elevation for me of the impact of the work that Burlington has been doing around culture. And I'm so thankful that you said all of what you said, but especially at the end, because sometimes we're brought into a school and folks say, oh, I'm just here for students. I'm here for the students. Or we need this work because of the students. But the reality is that students will leave at 3:10 or 3:30 or whatever time. But for the rest of the afternoon or before students show up in the morning, it's your colleagues, it's adults that are there. It's colleagues that you're in PD and in meetings with and in collaborations with. And so it's, you know, the time you spend, there's a lot of time spent with adults. And I, you know, I wish that we can do like a virtual iceberg kind of discussion breakdown right now, but it's an activity that we do in community building about needs-based theory. And we show the top of the iceberg shows like the different things that you could see on a good day or on a bad day at school. But at the bottom of the iceberg is, well, I don't want to give too much away for folks that are in training, but we see the things that have, that are underneath the iceberg. And so I always come back to that analogy, that image too, in this.
I just think about like, because I taught for, I think 7 years, 6 years before I became an administrator, and you know, going back to what my principal always says, like, we create the weather. And so I always think about, like, the worst days that I had in my classroom were the days that I just had a bad day. Like, if I wasn't feeling good, like, I was sick, or I had, you know, had an argument with someone the morning before, or, like, you know, if I brought that into the classroom, like, my class was not great that day. My lesson did not go as planned. My kids were jumping off the walls, like, you know, and it was because of the energy that I brought. And so that's why I say, like, we need to start with the adults, because if you are creating a culture for your adults where they don't feel valued, where they don't feel listened to, where, like, you know, they don't feel like they matter, where, like, they don't want to come to work, that's how they're going to show up in front of kids. And that's how kids are going to show up too. Whereas if you can create the space where it's like, I feel listened to, oh, well, I should make my kids feel listened to as well. I feel happy to be here. My kids are going to be happy to be here, because your kids, they feed off of your energy, you know, and they know when you're being genuine. They know when you're being phony, you know? So like, yeah, I think it has to start with the adults. And I feel like that's a lot of the work that I've had to do, that we've had to do as a leadership team at Burlington, is just like, let's work on the adults so that then, you know, we can all focus on why we're all really here, which is the students. But without that, I don't think we would be able to do what we've been able to do.
If you could, I know we're on the radio, we're on podcast, but you know, there's been so many times in this conversation that I've been doing my jazz hands like we do in circle. Any last thoughts before we close? Any last things for folks to know about how amazing you all are?
Well, thank you for saying we're amazing. No, I mean, I would just say you know, I know that our partnership is officially ending this year, or has officially ended. And that's, I'm really, really sad about that. But I'm more than happy to continue to help with, like, anybody who wants to come and observe, who wants to sit in on a circle, who wants to, you know, or I know that, like, you know, sitting in on a circle as a person who's not a part of that community might be a little bit weird. So, like, I'm happy to film circles to, you know, support with, answer any questions of anybody who's thinking about working with CCJ or bringing restorative practices to their schools. I'm more than happy to do that because I really do believe in the work now. And I say now because, like I said, I'm one of those people who, like, in the beginning was like, what is this? Like, you know, what, why? And so I would be more than happy to support with that. I've had a few people come and observe already. I remember we had that one school that you were like, hey, you know, can somebody come and observe tomorrow? Like, I remember it was like such a short turnaround. And I was like, yeah, sure. Cause I think they were making a decision on whether they wanted to, you know, move forward with that or not. Yeah, I'm always happy to showcase what we're doing. And I'm also conscious, like, we've still got a lot of areas to grow in. I think we've come a long way, but we're also not the experts at Circle. We're not, you know, the like, you're not going to come and see that every circle is perfect and every kid is like, you know, sitting up straight and like, there's still a lot of things to work on. But yeah, I'm more than happy to support in any way that I can.
So in true fashion, let's close out with a checkout question. And this check, and in true fashion also, this checkout question was not planned, and just based on what I was hearing, you talked about the principal, shout out to Charles Miller, about temperature and weather and culture. And so our checkout question is, on the best day where culture feels right, it's at top of the iceberg, a good day at school, what is the weather for you or for us? What is the weather on a good culture day at school?
It's so funny because the one thing that I'm thinking about right now, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie Miss Congeniality.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They ask her, what is your ideal date?
Yeah.
And she says April 25th. I think she says April 25th. Because it's not too warm, it's not too cold, and all you need is a light sweater. And I'm actually thinking about that because I feel like for me, like that actually is the perfect weather because, you know, it, like right now it's been so hot that it's just like uncomfortable. And then when it's really cold, it's like, oh God, I'm so cold. I want to wear like 17 layers. And so I think the weather would be, you know, warm, but like not, you know, not with the sun like blasting where like it, you know, it hurts you, it like burns. It's like, oh my God, it's too hot. And there's a little bit of wind. And like, it's just comfortable, you know, it's just like, you can wear a t-shirt and like jeans and you're comfortable and you're not too hot, you're not too cold. So yeah, something like that. There's no rain. There's like, you can see the clouds in the sky. Yeah. I don't know if I answered that right.
No, that's actually, super similar to, what I was going to say, because, you know, so I grew up in Santa Ana, in Santa Ana, and, you know, it's, you know, the Santa Ana winds are real, and when it would be, for me, the weather for a really good, solid culture day at school, positive culture day at school, is when there's a warm wind, because I remember as a, being in elementary school, the days that it was windy would be really exciting. Like, I remember, you know, like, the tether ball would be a little harder to play, and there would just be like, it would, you know, and there would be kids, we would be screaming because the wind, there would be like gust of wind. And I remember one of the days that you and I were observing, and we were going from your office to the other end of campus, and it was spirit day, and we had to stop at the thing to get rope or balls or cones or something, and you were like, oh, I'm sorry, I have to do this. And I was just like, you know, like, not being at one school site anymore, like I have been for a long time, you know, I miss the everyday craziness of, like, you know, not sitting down for like hours sometimes. But for me, that makes it exciting. And I think on a good, positive culture day at school, like, it's exciting. There's like anticipation in the air. So I think about that warm wind. And I think about Spirit Day, and it just, like, hearing voices and hearing like laughter and hearing, like, you know, happy screaming from students or happy yelling, or even, you know, like in a meeting with adults, like hearing adults, you know, like joke to each other and, like, you know, like yell out. And so yeah, so for me it's a warm, like a warm breeze, a warm wind. Much gratitude to you, Kim, for your time today. Yeah, so thank you to you. Thank you to all of the work that the folks at Burlington have done, the admin team, past and present, teachers, students, families. I'm so grateful for the collaboration that we at CCJ has had with Burlington and the ways that, like, Burlington has pushed the work of implementation and restorative justice, you know, that we do with other schools further. And so I'm super grateful. Any last thoughts, closing things before we close out?
No, just thank you for having me too. I think I'm grateful to be here as well.
All right, folks. Well, this has been a super amazing episode. This has been What You Know About RJ, Sharing Stories and Skills About Restorative Justice, a podcast of the California Conference for Quality and Justice. Please go to our website at cacej.org, where you can connect with our various social media accounts and connect with us there. And thank you for listening.